All right, so the next item on the agenda was the Aquifer Balance Project, and what we're going to just discuss and some of the things that Kelly and I have talked about is moving forward on creating or developing an analysis on a lot of the water proposals and water projects that are or could be available within Cedar Valley, and then putting a dollar sign to each one of those acre foot wise to see what the cost of each acre foot or what of each project would be, and how much water that could basically either save us within the district or provide extra water to within Cedar Valley. So we had mentioned in our last meeting that we wanted to do this and what we wanted to do is just share what our thoughts are as far as moving forward and just make sure that's okay, we got the right direction from the board, what we want to do. So some of the concerns or thoughts that we had heard were whether the scope would be so broad that it would basically cost a lot of money. So how do we narrow that down, and how do we get all the ideas on the table and make sure that we've done a due diligence to give every project the attention that it needs, or every potential idea out there to give it the attention that it needs, so that we can show that we've looked at all available resources within our valley, and that we can actually put a map together or a timeline together of what project we should do and when, what time it should come online, and what's going to work best for our area. So I think that's kind of the reason why we wanted to discuss that.
What did you talk about the aquifer?
So the aquifer, it's kind of broadened.
Balance, essentially we're talking about figuring out how to get water from the northern part of the valley up to the southern part. Is that
well,
what we're talking about?
So I've broadened it now, and for this work meeting, I'm not going to leave anything off the table as far as potential projects. So included in that is the aquifer recharge, because that's essentially balancing the aquifer. So basically, it's maintaining or keeping
aquifer recharges. Trying to save the cold drink water and not lose it. Aquifer balance is moving water from the north to the south. Is that kind of what we're all thinking?
Yes. As far as defining those, yes, that's what it is. What we're trying to get at is we're trying to broaden the scope of work of what we're doing with this project to include all of those and assess how much value we're getting in the valley for put a dollar number to every acre foot that we're gaining based off of those different projects. So balancing the aquifer, the net gain is only really time. We're essentially pulling water from the north, transferring it to the south. Hopefully we're recovering the aquifer a little bit. Well, the net gain is not really anything in the overall bathtub. Bringing water from Pine Valley into the valley is a net gain of potentially 15,000 acre feet.
You get a net gain from recharge, from not letting that water evaporate.
You know, just the last week, all of that water that's come down the creek, I mean, I mean, it rained 4 inches. No sense me pumping that water out on the ground. Is the only one that smiles the power company.
Right.
And for a week, that thing's been running a couple of hundred second feet of water, and it's just all gone out in the bushes somewhere, way out the Rush Lake, or out the Twitchy Pond. That's by far the cheapest way to save water is that cold brick recharge system.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we put a couple million dollars in that, we'll save, some years we'll save 10,000 acre feet or 20,000 acre feet of water.
Right. And so, and that's exactly what we want to show.
So, you know, kind of like what we were talking about, what the state center overdraft is 9,000 acre feet. Say Coal Creek's, you know, plus or minus annually an average of 3,000, 4,000, whatever, and then you're going to have your peak years of, you know, maybe higher than that. And then you've got the
sewer. Even on normal years, we waste a lot of water.
And then if you look at the sewer treatment, there's another 3,000. So there's 66% of the total overdraft that the state's saying there is. I mean, 66% recovery is, you know, it's pretty good.
Is that overdraft closer to 10,000 feet a year now?
That's for the, yeah, the UGS latest report. It has it at 9,000 acre feet. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know where they come up with that.
This is pretty high number now.
The oil where you're putting the walls. Trying to get his name in the paper before he retired.
So,
Bill Williams.
Bill's ready to retire.
So just going forward with that, what Paul and I have discussed, and you know, we talked about a little bit in the board meeting, potentially narrowing that list down to the most viable potential projects. We've talked about that a little bit, and we almost want to come back with a little bit of a recommendation that we include all the projects in that. Maybe what we could do in order to make it more efficient is Paul and I could do kind of the front end work and put a lot of the gathering of data together before we go hire a consultant to do a final report together, but include all of that data for him, for them, to put that together, and then, you know, maybe we have project 25-50% done, and then hand it over, let them evaluate it, come in with their own opinions, and be able to put together a solid report that really takes into account all these different projects that have been talked about all around the valley, and basically gives us some real solid direction on how to go forward. You know, is Pine Valley the number one best bang for our buck? Or is the effluent coming out of the sewer treatment plant our best bang for our buck to gain acre feet of water here in our valley? Or is the recharge project, and prioritize those, put dollar numbers to them, come out of that backside with a solid plan that lays out some timelines, lays out some other things that can help us recover that 10,000 acre feet, but also and also plan for the future.
Well, I think you're on the right track. You know, I mean, we need to have a credible plan that the community is coming to be on board with us before we start committing a lot of money to anything.
The only thing I can see on that is, you know, I like the concept of all this stuff going in there together, but we get spread out so thin. I want our main focus still to be on that West Desert, you know, and then we got these other little projects, but let's don't spread ourselves so far out there that we're not taking care of big picture. I mean, we've got a bunch of projects, and they're probably all good projects, or they're good to go in some way, but we get spread so thin and so much going on. That's just, you know, it seems like we're throwing darts out there. And
yeah, and that's why I think it is important to do this, because there are some things that we can do and need to do here within our own valley. Mm-hmm. but we need to see what projects are worth the time. And it, you know, maybe some of them, maybe it makes more sense if we do this analysis to take a look at it and see, maybe it makes more sense to work on a few things here. Obviously, hey, come on in. Obviously, it may make a little bit more sense to. I don't remember where I was at. So the Coal Creek, if we have the National Guard do that, it makes a lot of sense to move forward and analyze that and see what kind of benefit that's going to have to our valley and move forward. And maybe there's some other uses now that the wastewater treatment plant is cleaned up. And getting back to what Spencer was saying, you know, that gets us closer to, you know, two-thirds of what our deficit is. We can utilize those waters and do it in an efficient manner. But then, also looking at other options, obviously, you know, Gary's got a lot of good ideas thinking outside the box of where we can be and what we want to do as far as other waters that are available in our valley. So,
we're in the past, we've already come up with this list, right? In the last 2 years?
Yes.
So we're going to now take that list and make it a little bit more focused. Is that what we're trying to do so that we can say, all right, here's our priorities.
Yeah, and we're going to put a dollar sign, so we're going to do economic analysis behind it. So we can say, per acre foot, this is the cost of doing this project and kind of the benefits.
So can we go back through our minutes and find out what those lists are, or are you trying to look for a list right now of what we...
No, we've got a list, and we've also got the research done on a lot of different other projects or different ideas that are out there. So it's a lot of it's existing, yeah.
Well, let's get that list and cut them ones off that we don't want to mess with, you know. Let's narrow that down, but I don't know.
Yeah. And I think really we ought to kind of leave everything in there just so we can check it off the list. Because that, my own opinion, and this is without, you know, well, obviously we've been doing a lot of work on this for a long time. I really think you're going to look at that and the 15,000 acre feet that we can pull out of Pine Valley. Just the fact that we have that kind of volume there is going to define this whole thing. Because we have no other 15,000 acre feet anywhere else.
Yeah.
And so that's really going to drive this whole thing. And it may fall out, and you know, my guess at this point is that it's going to fall out at, you know, at the end and say, really, for what you're trying to accomplish, that's where you're going to need to go. In order to take care of the next 50 years, that's where you need to
go. I think that makes sense. That makes sense. However, if there's some of these small ones, as these guys are saying, that we could quickly do, I think that would be a benefit too. We might not get the full 15,000. Maybe we only get 2 to 3. But if the economic side of it's realistic, then and doable within a couple of years, then maybe that's something that we quickly look at, because we know that we're going to have a little while. Hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about this morning right away and everything else approved. So.
Well, yeah, I think our plan is going to do something substantial every year for West Desert. And then we can work on these other things if we get hanging through, if it works out, and we can do it. Exactly.
I think it would be impossible for us to make decisions without that cost-benefit ratio and a timeline.
Yeah. But we'll move forward with that.
Yeah. I think we're on the page.
Yeah. Welcome to the BLM.
How are you?
Come on in and join the powwow. Grab something to eat. Really? I know, right?
That's the most
important
thing. Hey,
glad
you're back.
John Black.
Hi, Rick.
John Black.
Gina.
Gina.
Hi. How are you doing? It's been a while.
Say whatever you want. Oh, you're
here. You're
good?
Good morning. Good to meet you.
John Black.
Good to meet you. Good to meet you.
John Black.
Good to meet you.
John Black.
How are you?
John Black.
Nice to meet you.
Spencer Jones.
I'm Brooklyn.
Hey, it's not taking much for me to crash.
You know what? Yes. I'm in France.
You woke up early. I don't know why I know that.
I got an email from the
reporter, and she's like,
so what did you tell him back?
It's just me, the amount of stuff that comes up. I have no idea what he meant by that. We'll try not to disturb you.
County building, and they can't even get the flag squared around.
We've only been asking them to fix that bathroom for 2 years now, so the county.
County.
They make zero improvements to it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that fan in there. Scare you right to death. Get in there. Holy crap.
There's no peace and quiet.
No.
All right.
Well, I'll give you a little card when you get those crazy jobs.
I gotta have one of them, man.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Oh, I got on here. All right. They come one day and that flag out there on that pole is just shredded. That government building, and you can't even afford it. I'll buy the flag if you get it put up. Jeez. Now I notice that there's not even one out there.
No. Make myself
a smoothie.
You gotta put a little cast iron flag out there. Just kind of glue it to the wall.
Don't you be grabbing that beam.
My goodness. Come on, get out of here. I'm going to watch the photos.
I'd like to thank you, ladies, for coming and giving us a brown
name.
There you go.
Trip.
Yeah. We
did you stay in
a lot
of tried to get into a couple of
months.
Watson wouldn't let us.
What does BLM stand for?
The Bureau of Land Management.
I thought it might be the Bureau of Lady Managers.
It could be. Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, recently. Coming up, I could change it. Yeah.
The encroachment of graphic change.
At least you didn't come up with another acronym. We've heard a whole
bunch. That's old guys.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of acronyms.
Unless Jamie shows up, then he'll learn that.
If our chairman's...
He had to step out. He had to go to that meeting.
Oh, was he going to go to it?
Yeah, he's not.
Okay, I thought he was...
He had that bank meeting or something.
I thought he said he was going to stay here.
No, he's gone.
Okay. I guess you're in charge.
Oh, oh wow, thanks, Brad. Well, welcome. And hopefully to do with the BLM, and we're the board, and sit on the water. And you know Paul. You've probably not met some of us here. And you know Kelly and the engineer and stuff. But hopefully this meeting we can just get some stuff thrown out there and get her learn a little bit more and understand what's going on. So I'll just... Unless you got any questions, I'll turn it over to Paul and you can start it.
No, yeah, I want to, I don't have, well, I guess I'll just set kind of what we want to do is to have you guys walk us through the steps of where we're going to be going over the next, hopefully less than 10 years on the environmental process. Most recently, Kelly and I have done some work to put together where we want to do some initial test wells, and you can walk us through just that process, which doesn't sound to be too painful, and then we'll just open up question and answers, both sides. You guys can ask us whatever you want to ask us, and then whatever, if anybody has any questions along the way, it'll just be an informal Q&A and hopefully answer all the questions we have and keep the ball rolling here. So.
Sounds good.
Turn the time over to you, Michelle.
So, I don't know if many of you knew, we met in February, a group of us met in February, and we kind of went over a couple different items, kind of went over the whole West Desert Pipeline project in a whole, and then now I think today we're more focusing on Pine Valley, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I did put some maps together, and all those are the different planned development points. Some of them are existing, and some of them are proposed to be new. I didn't color code them like you guys have that. I didn't have the time. So mainly our wildlife file just wasn't able to make it today, so I pulled up potential items that would be issues in our NEPA documents that the BLM committed to writing for these test drilling, test pumping locations in Pine Valley. So it looks like in the first map, I believe, is the Sage Grouse one. And so you could see that's going to be an item that we're going to have to discuss heavily in our NEPA documents. The second page is the mule deer. It looks like it's just, looks like it's winter, so there could be a restriction to not construct during their winter range. And if you guys construct outside that time zone, then that would already be mitigated. And then here's a Utah prairie dog.
What
is also
that time zone?
Listen, I think it's to like December 15th to April 15th.
He did have that one, yeah. And then on that same map is the Utah prairie dog one. I don't know if I have the most current layer, but you can see it looks like kind of like tiger stripe orange. Those are some of the prairie dogs colonies that we have. I don't know if it's the most current one, so
your
that
prairie
layer.
Dogs in Beaver County, though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So they claim. So that's just something to think about and something that may or may not come up in our NEPA document as well. The second map.
The third, sorry.
So when we were out there, these are just mapped areas, but we don't think that there's any out there, right?
Yeah, Adam even noted that out there. It didn't look like it was occupied.
Uh-huh,
yeah,
okay.
So if they could exist, this is the map one. I don't know if it's...
If they're actually out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we didn't see any out there when we went... Plus, it was the weather conditions were bad.
Right. I guess the weather's usually... I mean, it's always windy out there, so...
It is, yeah.
If they do live out there, it's going to be hard to...
They're hard to find them. Yeah. And so the last map is a pronghorn. I debated on whether or not I was going to pull up this shapefile on this map for you or not, because our whole field office is pronghorn habitat, basically. And that will also have that stipulation. And usually if you guys are constructing during that, a mitigation would be to have a monitor there on site. And we're doing that on the Cameron and Milford transmission line right now.
Okay.
They have a monitor out there on site right now.
Not for the pump.
They did. We early looked at their pump. And their women.
Do either the pronghorn or the mule deer have any sort of protected status?
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The CWR is very concerned about them.
So what do they look for, like in construction? Right? If you're pushing them around, or they don't stick around there too long.
So,
right.
Yeah. Like if you had a bunch of pronghorn just sitting right on top of your well site, something like that, that would probably be, you would wait for them to leave to, you know, do construction in that location.
And I think fawning habitat is
actually.
But you don't see any many of these. I know the sage grouse is big. Them other two can, mule deer and pronghorn, they probably move sage grouse. They probably hunker right in there and probably don't go too far.
Yeah, for sage, I think the biggest issue is going to be sage grouse.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
How will this change? Obviously, you don't know much about the new plan, right?
Well, the new plan was just released last Thursday.
Okay.
So I think there was a, we did put out a press release for that. We don't know what the final, basically the sort of draft plan is out, the final environmental impact statement, and we're expecting a record of decision by the end of the summer.
Okay.
So some things could, you know, some things could change, obviously, between now and then, so that's just something we'll have to adapt to, because...
But the current plan says the same things that you've just told us now, mm-hmm. that, you know, we would just have to monitor, or...
The current plan, we would probably be, we'd have to look for, let's see, Michelle, I don't know if you had any, no, so I'm expecting
so
this
the
is all
brood, the I think it's all brood and occupied is the same group.
Yeah.
So
I'm pretty sure that's probably on priority.
Yeah. The main restrictions for sage grouse, I think that we would be dealing with on this project would be restrictions of activities within 4 miles of LEX. We have the research and proposed plan would basically show that that's the location that's most critical to the grouse. And then it'd be timing limitations. So where you have winter habitat and brooder habitat, you'd probably be restricted to construction, I would imagine, late summer into the fall, just because of those two kind of overlapping issues.
Okay.
But we'd have to see where LEX are, and we'd be working with UDWR on, fingers crossed, we'll be working with UDWR and the Fish and Wildlife Service on this because we're not
right.
interested. So that's, I mean, let's keep the end goal in mind here. So we'd be working with UDWR on impacts and figuring out what steps need to be taken to protect the species.
And just to go back, what is LEX?
LEX are, it's spelled LEKS. It's the location where the birds actually breed in the late winter and early spring, and so there are these large flat areas. All the females will line up along the edge, and the males will like strut.
Do a little dance.
Yeah.
I saw that on PBS.
Yeah, and they're pretty fun to watch. Yeah. Like
pretty crazy.
They make this whooping noise with
do.
Their chest. So
they're
anyway,
crazy.
That's the critical activity. Obviously, they lek in pretty consistent locations year to year. So that, and then the 4 miles around it is where the females will then go and have their nests and raise their broods. And so that's why it's so critical. A lot of the research coming out of Wyoming related to, you know, wells specifically indicates that this is, you know, this is the activity area that's most critical to the species. And I think, you know, wells, for example, in this location, we would be concerned about creating perches for predators. So we would want, you know, they don't want structures above ground that a predator can land on. And that's not just well activity, it's also like fence lines and, you know, transmission. Anything that would create a perch for a raptor to just hunt in the middle of that would be a bad deal. So. Yeah. So again, we would hopefully be working with the state on the prescriptions that we would need for the bird. And if not, if the bird were listed for as a threatened or endangered species, then we'd be working with the service, and we work well with the service as well. So.
Okay.
So you don't see this as a big hurdle, though? Do you think we can...
I think it'll be something we need to deal with, but I guess I don't necessarily see it as a complete showstopper. I think the last thing that I guess I don't know what the outcome will be is in the draft plans there are limits on habitat disturbance. So essentially we don't want to lose any sagebrush, and what the plans say is once you get to a threshold of sagebrush loss, then you have to create more. And so that might be part of the outcome, would be that, you know, in order to facilitate this project, we have to, our sagebrush habitat would have to grow. And we have plans in place with Watershed Restoration Initiative, I think, that would allow us to do that. So
the test waters will help water the sagebrush.
We can transplant some sage for you.
So yeah, it would be kind of, the concept is that it would kind of, you kind of have this constantly growing. Yeah, you have this constantly growing habitat so that you never, percentage-wise, you never hit that threshold of 3% is what you're looking at.
Okay. Is there anything in there that would, you know, coming through there with that pipeline with water that we could trough up or put there for habitat use? Is any of that?
That might be something we talk to the state about, you know, in terms of, I don't know, water sources, like ponds and things. Yeah. Sometimes we do those related to range improvement projects. I don't know if that would be a limiting factor for the birds there or not. Everyone seems pretty focused on predator opportunities and habitat, but it's certainly something we could talk about.
Could see about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you say that this Lex was a certain time of the year, or is it year-round?
The lecking is, yeah, early spring, like which means like late February through April.
So it would be almost the same time, or
in terms of
with the mule deer and
that, the timing would be parallel with everything else. I think the big difference though would be if we have restrictions on an actual facility within the Lex. So we really kind of just need to know where those are. So we might have to, talk about placement of wells that are outside that radius. But again, it's a little difficult because it's preliminary and it's not something that we do in a vacuum. It's something that we have to talk to the state about as well.
Has the state gone out and defined where all the Lex are?
We do know where a lot of Lex are, but some projects, if we don't have the data, we will have surveys done in advance of construction to see if there's any new ones. So we do have a good sense. We just don't have them on this one. But I imagine if the state's data, if we're in riverine habitat, we're really in lucky habitat. I mean, that's, they go together. So
part of the whole environmental analysis process that I'm part of is seeing exactly where you want to put them and what's there, and if we need to move it a little bit to get away from things. And that's something that I think should be our first step right here. We need to find out exactly where you want to put these, where your first priorities are, and then if we need to move them because there's problems. That's number one.
Excuse me, on your third map, you have the little red dots for weeds. Are those intrusive weeds that you'd like to come up and get rid of, or are those weeds that need to be protected?
So they're noxious weeds.
Okay. We want to get rid of those.
And I pulled up that point just to get an idea of what was near those proposed facilities. And I don't know if some of them already been treated. But that's something we want to make sure we're not spreading those noxious weeds, and that if we have to treat them prior to construction, then that's something we'll probably discuss in the need document as well.
Do you guys familiar with what NEPA is? Unfortunately. Are you familiar with what NEPA is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Basically, the environmental review process we have to go through, the document we need to create. That's really.
It's what? All my fault. I built the IRS pipeline and they made us create the first NEPA document in history.
Wow.
Hey, I'm glad
I wasn't the only one
on
there.
What a legacy.
Yeah.
So, do we see anything else out along there that will bother us other than maybe these wildlife? Is there.
Cultural. So
cultural.
This was just wildlife. I didn't do anything cultural.
Okay.
I don't have that data. But there will have to be a Class 3. Usually just go out there, walk the ground, and see what's out there for each site. And then if there is anything found, then we're going to have to work with SHPO to decide whether we're going to treat it or if we're going to protect it.
Remove it or avoid it, right? We'd either move the well. Well, it depends. If the site's significant, then
right. We
would either move the well or we would do a mitigation for the site.
And really, at this point, regular, I mean, especially in a short area, it gets plus or minus half a mile and we're pretty okay.
Okay.
Yeah. We're bad. Yeah. There's no reason to start mitigating it. We can just
okay.
We're just guessing what's 700, 800 people over now. So.
Okay.
And that's something I suppose we need to talk with that on one of our staff if we're going out and want this contract about or if we're going to try to do it.
Yeah,
we'll probably not be able to tell you the contract. So class 3, are there certain things that you allow in that, or is class 3 like the strictest?
Oh, class 3 is just the survey stamp. What that means is it's an archaeology term as far as the type of survey that you do. And so basically that just means that an archaeologist is in Utah, Virgin transects that are 15 meters apart and looking for any sites that would be eligible for the National Register of Historic Places. So that's just what Class 3 survey stands for. And then if a site is eligible for the National Register of Historic Places, that's when we're looking to see how to deal with it.
Okay.
So bottom line, we need an archaeologist and a biologist to check the sites, and then we go from there.
So do you use the DNR biologist to do that?
We have our own biologist, our own archaeologist. Sometimes they can work on projects, depending, I mean, just like maybe 3 sites, they could probably do it, but with this many sites, I don't know if they could. Otherwise, we have people contracted, find their own archaeologist and biologist. Barbara Frank is a local one. Do you have any local biologists?
Yeah. How is that done as far as, paying for those services? Is that something that we would hire and then provide the reports to you?
Sure. Okay.
There are a couple environmental groups.
There's SWCA and JBR. Like, there's a lot of companies around that.
I guess a question would be too, we have a lot of wells proposed. It's Kelly, do we want to, I think as far as moving forward, I don't know that we'll have the funds available to do all of them all at once, just for test wells. So if we selected some, I mean, would that make it so that we could do in-house, or is it better to do all of the environmental stuff all at once, and
really,
then
it's not real intent. The level 3, I mean, to do all those, you might be a day, maybe 2 days for a biologist and archaeologist to go do that.
Yeah,
these are pretty small sites for them.
I would recommend finding out what cultural you have up front, and then typically on wildlife, if the project's going to be over, let's say, a 5-year time frame, then generally we'll say maybe do like a general habitat study to begin with, and then before you go, like in the year you're going to go do the construction, then you would have the biologist actually look at the site, and then we would have descriptions in your project that would say how it will adapt if they find something. That said, if we know that there are sagegrass lugs up front, that's something we would want to deal with, on the front end of the project.
Is that something that we want to do, is get the DNR involved here pretty early, just go meet with them pretty soon and go ask them to conduct some research out there? Or
well, I think,
do they have stuff already, stuff they can provide us?
Yeah, I think they might have the data in terms of the LEX, but I would say maybe an action item is to have our wildlife biologist work with you guys and follow up with them so that we're all on the same page as we move forward.
So do you want Sherry to meet with DWR and
Sherry? Yeah, have Sherry and Paul and DWR, or Kelly and DWR get together. Probably with Paul as well.
You know, if you could talk them into it, boy, I'll tell you what, just taking a field trip with the archaeologist and the
biologists one day and show them all these sites and have the clearances done, which just save you a lot of time. And then I haven't talked to Elizabeth about this, I don't think. I'm not sure if I have. I probably should. But, you know, at least for this initial phase, you know, I'm willing to write up the NEPA document, which will save you at least $20,000. So you owe me. No.
We'll take it. We'll take it. Yeah.
There's a couple months.
I'll take one.
Water.
But that means basically you get the application in and then I'll write up the environmental document, but I can't do that until I have the cultural biological clearances.
How so far along are you on the application?
We've got halfway filled out.
Okay.
It's
almost over.
Finish up the mapping really and then it's
I would probably keep all your points on there and not drop any at this point. Until you go out there on the ground and figure out if there is a site or if there's a Lex right there, then maybe that could be dropped. So I would bring them all to the table at front and then have to weed out which ones later if we have to or move them.
Is there a time frame that the biologist and the archaeologist have to be out there? So valid for 24 months, something like that.
Archaeology, once you've done it, you've done it.
Okay.
They just can't have snow cover.
Yeah, they can't do it in the snow. Wildlife, yes, that's where, you know, we'll want to talk to DWR and talk to Sherry or biologist about timing for kind of the upfront studies. And then also, that's why we don't, because there's a shelf life to those of usually a year of what's actually there. That's why we wait until you're ready to construct to do the follow-up.
Okay.
But really, it sounds like if we can make sure that we're not within that.
I think the Lex are the bigger.
Lex, that's going to be
the Lex are the biggest issue. And I have to check. I mean, that's kind of the science behind it. Ultimately, the plan amendments will dictate that buffer, that distance around Lex, but. 4 miles should be as big as it's going to get.
Is there a lot of grass on
it? Are there what?
Is there a lot of sage grass
on it? There's not. We don't actually have a lot of data on Pine Valley other than we know, you know, we do have activity out there. We have telemetry. We have collared birds in most of our other areas, but we don't have any in Pine Valley yet. So I'm not sure how many there are. But it's more kind of a... The concept is if you maintain the habitat, then habitat loss is really the big impact on them. So it's kind of we need to keep the habitat intact for however many there are.
Have you seen any out there? You've been out there?
I haven't seen any sage grass. And most of our sites, and Michelle, we drove to, you know, snowing like crazy, but but most of the sites were actually pretty bare. We're not in the middle of sagebrush on most of them. There are a few.
There are
two or three that were in sagebrush, but so we'll need to check the
grass.
Is this sage perimeter that's drawn here, is that based on topography pretty much? Are the sage down in the lower parts?
I think it's a UDWR layer. I don't know how they
drew the boundaries based on sagebrush and also historic sightings of grouse. So essentially, if you have like a, you know, sometimes you have a kind of a wonky looking perimeter, it's because somebody saw a bird out there, and that's, you know, where the furthest perimeter of what they have documented.
Most of those points of diversion, the triangles, are down in the valley, so it's not. Yeah, it's not entirely the whole valley floor.
So, Gina, maybe you could walk us through just those next few steps as far as... So, like Michelle said, we're submitting the application, then we'll get
the
surveys done on that, and then...
Right. And then basically, we can take from the application. Is it preferable to take from the application the proposed action?
Yeah, so the proposed action would be in the application. It's your guys' proposed action. And then we then take the proposed action and a checklist of all the different resources that we manage for. And then they basically tell you if there's going to be an impact or no impact. Basically, those are, there's three different little codes that they could use, and based on those codings will depend on what we have to further detail analyze in our NEPA document, and so, which cultural will definitely be one, and wildlife will for sure be one. Other items are like the water one, Jeremy Jarnicky, mm-hmm. is probably going to have that in our NEPA document, is the water. And there, I should have brought an example of a checklist that we do, but there's like 30 action items. 30
different resources we have to consider.
Yeah, yeah.
So all the ones that then might be potentially impacted, we describe in this NEPA document, we describe what the existing environment or what the affected environment is, yeah. and then how those will be potentially affected. And the big tricky part is what's the cumulative impact. You have to take into consideration what's happened in the past, what we're proposing, what we see possibly happening in the future on state, private, BLM land, it doesn't matter who owns the land, and what the whole cumulative impact post-action will be on different resources. That's just, and then from that we determine what stipulations are going to have to be part of the grant to try to protect those resources. It's not a, if there's impacts, we can't do it. It's just letting the public know what the impacts will be and then how we possibly could minimize those impacts.
And they usually, the draft environmental assessment about for like a 30-day comment period.
So part of it, more the long term than the short term, is the, Michelle, you mentioned the water side of things. And these probably, you know, the test wells are you won't have any impact on the water, but, very minimal, a few thousand gallons. But the long term, I know in our previous meeting back in, when was that?
February.
Was it in February, or was it even?
The one we went on the field? Or?
No, and I know Elizabeth wasn't, we were back playing in D.C. but it was brought up that we'd want to go back and look at the water impact for the area. In further business with the state engineer, he kind of said, that's not really their purview, because that's the state engineer's purview, and he is the manager of the waters of the state of Utah.
Right. Well, and it's still not clear in my mind. We still have to get some information, because it's not whether they can withdraw the water. That's not our purview at all.
Right.
But how will it impact groundwater in the area may or may not be something we just have to put in the document. We don't control it, but do we need to analyze the impacts from it?
Okay, so really it's just documentation thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, showing what the impacts would be. Yeah. And still, I don't know.
Probably for test drilling, test pumping, not a huge issue, but once we get to the EIS at the pipeline, maybe a different story.
Potential groundwater withdrawal issues, so I have to see. That's still not clear.
Yeah, and the state engineer, he said he issued a letter right after a letter came from the BLM. He responded back to the state director. The state director changed since then, but he said, I was quite clear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, good. Hopefully that was clear.
But, I mean, ultimately, it's kind of above our pay grade as far as...
Yeah.
So, okay,
we'll let the state engineer deal with that, too.
Gina's... ultimately, there's a lot of impacts that can happen. It's a matter of disclosing them to the public and identifying them.
How long does it take usually for the NEPA document? What would you anticipate, I guess, is probably a better question.
For the test drilling, test pumping?
Yes.
So yeah, if we have the cultural and biology clearances up front, if you include the 30-day public comment period, there's a chance you could get it out in 3 months. Usually old cultural biology are real hang-ups. Depends on the time of year.
Yeah, I think the sage-grouse question might take a little bit longer. It's not necessarily going to be a fast one.
But ultimately, so if we're looking at the timeline, this year, 3 months... from now, we're not going to want to be drilling anyway in the winter, so we're going to get all this approved and we'll be ready to go next year, but we'll probably have to wait until summer into fall.
Or just, yeah. Summer.
Summer.
Because you got to get past that April time frame.
Yes.
Thank you. Right.
Is there an expiration date on your NEPA?
Not really. If circumstances change, we have to relook at it. We have another type of document called a Termination of NEPA Adequacy that we can use to review older EAs to see if they're still valid. It's also been called DUNEPA again. But it's, unless circumstances have changed, the original NEPA should still be valid.
Who determines that? Indeterminate?
Yeah, we run another checklist by the staff and say, has there been any change?
And I think it's before we figure out how safe grass is moving, we may or may not have to do DNA depending on what happens with the bird. That could probably be a...
Right, every year we'll probably have to do a biological.
So if we got things prepared then, and I guess you could still do your biological during the early spring, late winter, that wouldn't be an issue.
Right.
Okay.
Because basically what we'll say in our NEPA document is, if they find this, then we do this.
Okay.
So we'll hold up the whole thing if we find them.
Okay.
So that could be even, we'll move a mile away, or we'll remove that point of diversion, or whatever we want to say,
right.
4 miles away, sorry.
Again, I think your biological perspective is a grouse. I mean, we probably already have the data. I mean, we know where the breeder and habitat is. We know where the DWR knows where the lex are. So I think
there should really be a lot of big surprises.
Good.
Moves into the area.
But you
still have to document that
they
have moved in.
Okay. What's your moving beyond this test period and so forth as far as final approval of the pipeline and so forth? Do you anticipate an EA or a EIS or what?
I think we were kind of teeter tottering.
Yeah,
I think
we don't
still
know.
Are.
We have this thing. An EIS is what you have to write if you think there'll be a significant impact with a particular resource. People just kind of, as a knee-jerk reaction, say, if it's big, it has to be an EIS. I tend to argue that. You have to tell me what you think the significant impact is going to be. On the flip side, if we get enough political pressure, we might need to do an EIS, no matter what the resource is. That's the way the game works.
Well, and I guess the advantage of an EIS, if we all have the time, is that there's certainty at the end of the process with your record of decision versus, like, an EA, you can be challenged on that for it as far as your determinations of impact, effect, risk. An EIS, you've disclosed all of it, and so you reach your record of decision, and that's, you've gone through the process, no one can go back and make you do an EIS again.
And just to clarify, an EA is determined kind of if there will be significant impacts. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then you have to do an environmental impact statement that it's just kind of an EA grown up. And there's not really that many huge differences, except it has to go to the Federal Register, and you have to have certain public comment periods. So it takes longer. But, if you give us the stuff a couple of years in advance, we can do an EIS right off the bat.
And
it
what?
Just is time.
So you say a couple of years in advance, so would it be just basically an additional 2 years? What is the timeline between, what would be the timeline difference between an EA and an EIS?
Yeah, exactly.
For really.
Project this scale.
The big problem with an EIS is that it has to go to the Federal Register and that has to go through the Washington office
Well, you were just there. You got everything smoothed over for us.
Everything's going to take a lot. Everything was smooth until we got to Washington.
Yeah.
So we can say, technically, you should maybe add 6 months.
Yeah, maybe more.
Well, technically, you just need 6 months. if the Washington office gets involved, it could take a year beyond that. I don't know how long it will take for them to get things published and then look like for people. So that's the real trade-off. If you've got enough time, you can do an EIS. It's not that much more writing.
I think that's the direction that we need to really consider, because even if you do the EA and somebody comes back and challenges you, if I understood that correctly, you still have to go with the EIS, so you might as well.
No, not necessarily.
If you lose.
And I've never lost. But. However. Again,
we like even more.
Saving us money.
No, but I'm cautious on this point, because honestly, if it looks like there might be a significant impact, and considering the sage grouse issue, that would be what would throw it into an EIS.
So if our pipeline's going near Lex or something like that,
or just in the habitat.
It's
so controversial right now.
It is, yeah. I mean, that's a hot topic.
And frankly, the other thing that might put us into an EIS is just the public controversy of the water withdrawal. Yeah. Even though it's not something we control, the public will say that's going to have a significant impact on the environment. Mm-hmm. So with those two issues, that would be what would push us into an EIS. But you better consider it a couple years.
I would think, I guess for me, the biggest issue in my mind is the water issue. It's in denial about safe drugs, but...
We're all trying to be.
I know, but I think that just public, like Gina said, the public controversy, if you look at, the storm around, granted, it's a different scale of the project, but if you look at Southern Nevada Water Authority and the, people are going to draw comparisons between these projects, they'll probably try to draw cumulative say that, this on top of the Southern Nevada Water Authority project is going to be the driver. So, I think that we need to be prepared for the public to have a lot of concerns, and those are going to get elevated. I think that the idea that this is not going to be on the radar screen of our national office and our state office, and it's going to be on everyone's radar.
Even though they're in different states.
The public will make it their, will try to make it their issue, and their job is really looking at the perspective. They have to look at the whole, they direct public policy. And so, the second there's an issue, I worked on issues as soon as, a member of the public has a concern and they go to a member of Congress with their concern, it becomes a Washington office issue, because that's the level of communication that it has. So, it doesn't necessarily have to be a big issue to be on the radar screen, then it's kind of a discussion of how are we, what are the impacts, what is...
How well should we be connected with our representatives in D.C.?
I think it would behoove you to be connected. Yeah. I guess my thought is, with my, having my, little experience that I had there, I would say just no surprises on any end. I think that, what I see is we want to just keep, at BLM, we want to keep everybody informed on this project so that they're not surprised when there's federal register notice late in the game, or we get comments on an environmental assessment or what have you. We want to keep everyone in lockstep. And I think that would go kind of the same for you all, so that your delegation is not surprised when they get questions about the projects.
There will be kickback on this project, I can tell you right now. There will be political heat. Mm-hmm. And if there were ducks in a row, we just walk through the process.
What about right-of-ways down roads and stuff? Now, I don't know where I want to come with that, but we have the right-of-way to go down the county road, right? So many feet, you still have to do your impact and all that on them county roads.
Yes, because the county road, the right-of-way is specifically for the road. It can simplify it in terms of, your disturbance isn't expanding beyond the road, but if you want to change the use, if you want to put a ferry pipeline, for example, in a road, you would still have to have the right-of-way.
You still have to. Yeah. Okay.
And at the time that you issue right-of-ways, since the Department of Interior is the issue of the right-of-ways, is that a complete dedication, say, to a county, or is it typically just you hold all the reservations and grant only like a surface use kind of thing. So I guess the question is 100% of the autonomy with the BLM on the pipeline? It's not necessarily another jurisdiction, county, or yeah.
Well, with the grant holder, the terms and conditions define what the grant holder has, but I guess bottom, I think where you're getting with the question is if we grant a pipeline right-of-way to the county, that doesn't give the county the right to allow entry for other pipelines and things. It's not actually giving, it's not giving them the surface or control. It's giving them control of the surface for that specific activity, not any other.
So, let's just say for example that there's a farm, let's say, and let's say that, you know, back 100 years ago, Department of Interior gave, you know, this road right away. There's no way, and it was strictly exclusively for ingress egress,
right,
kind of thing like that. That's it. That the BLM would still reserve all of the other rights to give the pipeline access, and that the farmer wouldn't have any jurisdiction or anything like that, or, as long as it was restored back to. You see what I'm saying?
I do. In most cases, that's how it works. There are a few isolated. When you talk 100 years ago, that's actually before the Federal Land Policy Management Act. So sometimes there are some, you know, there are the Ditch Act. There are certain laws. There are certain. It depends on the authority under which the original grant was given. But in most cases, it's merely for whatever activity. So if it was for irrigation, the farmer in that case would probably have rights associated with irrigation. But again, it would still be something where we would just, ultimately, we just need to be talking. You know, we're not here to hold folks up or hold anything up. We're, you know, we just need to be talking. There's usually a way around, you know, some of these issues. So
can another county hold you up on that right of way? Can it, like Beaver County, hold us up?
Well, anyone can appeal the decision, and Beaver County will definitely be an effective party. But they have to show that we didn't analyze something we should have. They just saying that they don't like it
isn't going to cut it.
So we are homework. We're pretty much covered.
Yeah, I mean, you may end up in appeal, and you have to go to courts, but as long as
so
we
do... So right away, they're full force and effect. They have to file a stay for you guys to stop doing what you're doing.
I guess, again, I would like to think that as put on my Pollyanna glasses or whatever, but I think that, you know, I would like to get some issues worked out so that we're not... I don't want to be in court. I don't want to be doing appeals. I don't want to be waiting on the... You know, a federal judge, and I don't want a mugshot in Beaver County because we approved a pipeline. So, you know, I think we, you know, hopefully we can work some stuff out. And again, I think no surprises would be the way to do it, and to be transparent, and to really say, you know, if everyone can say at least that they had a seat at the table, then hopefully. We'll get through the process and be able to, you know, look back on it favorably.
So. Last question that I've got, and I know this is
kind of... Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Tim. See you, Tim.
So we don't know, you know, if there's any judicial involvement or anything like you're saying, but let's say that they're, you know, outside of that, from where we're at today, how long do you think it would take, providing that we provide the studies and reports that, mm-hmm. that are needed for you before that we could put the first piece of equipment down, starting to trench for a pipeline?
For a pipeline? I know
that's a pretty broad question. But.
I would give it probably at least a couple of years, and I would really budget for 3 or 4 for, like, just the... some of those unknowns.
Okay.
I'd rather get an early start on it rather than than assume that I would make my plans on a longer time frame. Just
So really, if we're trying to get water out of a pipeline 10 years from now, mm-hmm. we need to get...
yeah, find out your results from test pump and test pumping, see which ones you want to move forward with,
and then
submit the application, get rolling on the EAR EIS for the pipeline, and then in that same document, we'll discuss power to those well houses and the pipeline. So it's not just going to be the pipeline. We're also going to be discussing any type of
building,
power, building, anything that goes into that.
So you want your right-of-way before something else becomes endangered. Then you have
But kind of a rough guideline is 2 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And the pipeline right-of-way could be used by power line or buried cable?
Yeah, so when we issue right-of-ways, we have a term and condition in there that... So if it doesn't affect the other right-of-way, that we could issue other right-of-ways, too.
Right, so but it could make a difference. For instance, an underground pipeline through sagegrass isn't going to be as big of a deal as an overground line where the raptors perching.
Right.
So
I would say if you're thinking of overhead transmission lines, that we need to be looking at options outside outside those lines for sagegrass. Just because they're all, you know, wells above the surface, you can move around a transmission line. It's just a regular
I know you guys were thinking all kinds of different options.
Yeah, we're going to evaluate renewable. Yeah. So would like a wind turbine be similar to an issue like that, or do you think?
That's a bird flies into it. That's the latest.
Flying into the turbine?
Yeah. That's becoming a legal problem.
Yeah, but one wind turbine is different than a whole line of poles.
Yeah. Solar's a lot better. So you have a place for the sagegrass to hide under the panels.
I don't know. They might get cooked flying over.
All right.
But then it's ready for lunch.
Ready for lunch.
I think those are discussions that probably need to happen with the state and with our biologist folks and like look at those options. But yeah, I think. Coming to the table with a whole bunch of ideas on how to get your power there is probably the best advice.
Okay.
We only need really what is a couple of pump stations to bring that in.
Just out of Pine, we're really hoping if we can get some of those well sites that we've identified to work, we really can just pump out of the well and.
Bring it right home.
We have a booster station along the way, so ideal.
Okay. It is pretty much all
grass. We really appreciate, you know, what you went over with us and the insight and little suggestions and stuff like that. So we really appreciate that.
Well, thanks
and
for
your willingness to do that, you know, all of these things.
Look, sure, we're the government. We're here to help.
She probably won't say about the EIS.
That's a little different attitude than the forest. Well,
she did say if we gave her a few years, she'd be fine. Yeah, absolutely.
That's true.
Elizabeth's looking at no.
So one last thing, I know money is a big topic, but. When I pulled up the last authorization that Brandon did for the test drilling, test pumping, he had a code of federal regulations showing that you guys were exempt for that temporary type of style.
Okay.
So we'll move forward that you guys will be exempt from rent for those 3 years. Typically, temporary right-of-way are issued 3 years. So if it can get done in 3 years, that would be the best.
Okay.
And then monitoring and processing would be exempt as well, based on the regulations that Brandon had in the other one. I pulled them up, and you guys would still fall under that.
Thanks.
And then,
if you talk to WR to do your biology career,
that would save a bunch months too.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And Barbara's not too expensive if you can get her out on the cultural.
Yeah, she's probably as good as anybody.
Well, she's not paying overhead of a big company. That's the
problem
you're going to have with hiring these environmental consultants.
Yeah. I was an environmental inspector on Kern River Line, and mm-hmm. Barbara worked for me on that one, and she was fantastic.
Yeah, she's great.
I think that's the last side of my head. What about for you guys?
Yeah.
I think you gave us a lot of information. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
You know where to find us.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not very far away. Yeah. Yeah. But like I said, timeline-wise, we'll probably have the application done in the next few weeks and get that into you and show.
Yeah, and don't wait to figure out who's going to do what surveys. Get that application. I have a couple things I need to do before I get the proposed action and checklist out. So okay. The sooner the better. And just as much detail as you can. So if you're going to propose an acre at each site, let us know, or whatever it may be. Just be as very specific as you can. And if you have to bring gravel, or how long are you going to be sitting there, or just the more the merrier in this case.
We'll describe it right out.
Yeah.
The driller will show up with 17 trucks.
Yeah. Double day of breakfast.
Yeah.
And Mandy
will
have they haven't
taken breakfast. Yeah, I cooked breakfast for the last time we were out there. See, they're cooking breakfast like we've never had this before.
Thank you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
It was so
nice.
You got that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
now I got kids.
Yeah.
Well,
fine.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Where are you headed?
Oh, I need one.
Family, or are you working?
Maybe
married.
No,
thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
They're just not.
I'm glad you made it back. We were worried when Sam and I hope that they don't keep her there.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm cut off for living here. It's just everyone's just tense all the time because it's just high density people and
so,
yeah.
My sister-in-law, they lived in D.C. for 4 years.
I like being on the execution side of things. I think Ryan.